This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
This podcast is proudly in association with HelloFresh. HelloFresh is a subscription-based meal kit company that delivers amazing recipes straight to your door. On the app, you'll be able to choose your weekly recipes to meal plan your week. They deliver fresh ingredients straight to your door to make the recipes that have carefully been selected. With step-by-step recipe cards, there's no need to be a chef to cook delicious meals. You have full flexibility on what meals you get and when you get them. It's easy to add extra portions, change recipes, modify your delivery time, or pause your deliveries. We are also delighted to offer a 60% discount to West Ham fans on the first box and then a 25% discount on the following 2 months when you use the code WESTHAMWAY in capital letters. So download the HelloFresh app or visit the website www.hellofresh.co.uk/WESTHAMWAY to get these delicious, easy-to-make meals sent straight to your door. HelloFresh, dinner is solved.
You're listening to the West Ham Way podcast with Dave and X. Oi, oi!
Hello and welcome to the West Ham Way podcast with myself, Dave Walker, an ex-WHU employee. This week we're reflecting a point at home to Liverpool, an impressive milestone for Jared Onana, a send-off for David Moyes, his potential replacements, a deceptive league position, Chelsea on Sunday, and being conned by Savio before getting news from X and answering questions from patrons of the West Ham Way. We're desperate for points if we stand half a chance of qualifying for Europe again this season. We got one against Liverpool. Are you happy with that one? And what did you make of the performance?
I always felt Liverpool were there for the taking. I always felt, I said it on last week's show, that I thought we'd get something from that game. I didn't know specifically whether it'd be 1 or 3 points, but I thought we'd take something. We've got 1 point from it. You know, you look at them in terms of the where they are in the league. Not a bad result, however. They'd obviously lost to Everton. They'd lost to Crystal Palace. I felt we could have got more there. Am I disappointed? I don't know if disappointed is strong. It's probably a bit too strong, I'd say. But I think we could have maybe won that game. But at the end of the day, you're not going to complain too much about a point at home to Liverpool. But I did think we could have got 3 if we'd been fully on top of our game.
Yeah, I can't really add to that, mate, to be honest with you. It was end-to-end, wasn't it? I think overall they were probably the better side, but we had our chances as well, and they did. And it was just one of those games. I think, you know, whatever form Liverpool is in, it's always going to be a tough game because there's so much going on with them at the moment. They were still in the title race. Maybe we've ended it now. I don't know. Jurgen Klopp's last season. So it's quite emotional for them. So it's always going to be difficult home or away. So I think a point at home against Liverpool, as you rightfully say, isn't the end of the world. And here's what the gaffer had to say post-match.
What a dramatic afternoon, eh? That was a proper game.
It was a really good result for us. I mean, the players' character they showed came from 2-1 down against Liverpool, especially after last week's performance. You know, we were all shaking from it, still feeling the same about it. Desperate to get it out of the system. I thought the players done a brilliant job. I didn't think we played as well as I'd liked us to play. I thought Liverpool were the better team, but we showed the other parts of football, which is a bit of character, a bit of resilience, sticking at it. I think if MD had watched the Everton-Liverpool game in midweek, they've seen Everton doing a very similar job, which got them a result. So we could only get a 2-2 draw today, but I thought it was a good point.
Without their goalkeeper, I mean, we were pretty clinical, and the way we took our chances, he had to make some really fingertip saves to keep his team in it.
We did, their keeper made a couple of really, really good saves, and the one from Emo was an incredible save. I can remember that one. So but look, they put us under pressure near enough from the start. I was disappointed certainly with the first goal. The second goal is a bit unfortunate, but we scored two really good goals, and that was really good.
It doesn't matter what level of football you're playing at. You want your best players on the pitch. You want your players who are going to create and score goals, and having Jarrod back, I mean, he scored one and created the other one.
Yeah, having Jarrod back was great for us because you know, I think everybody's aware of what he can do and the difference he can make. You know, if you don't have Jarrod to score the goal, you know, maybe we're not quite getting as many. I mean, he's up to 20 goals now, I'm getting told, in all competitions. He's 16 in the Premier League. There's not many West Ham forwards for a long time got those numbers. So, you know, we have to start saying, you know, Jarrod's becoming really special and really important to us. But I think everybody knew that, and I certainly know that.
I said to Jarrod Mix, 34... I mean, he's built like a sort of running back in American football, but he's got 67 Premier League goals. And Jarrod said to us, when he performs like he is the last few weeks, it's back to sort of his best.
I think Mix probably looks fitter, leaner, playing as well as he has in the last 2 months than he's probably been for maybe 2 years. What Mix needs to keep is his goals, is always the thing we're after with Mick, and he scores a great goal. It was a brilliant cross by Jarrod and a really, really good header. And he's looked, Mick in recent weeks has looked a threat and got goals, which if we get that from our number nine, then it makes a huge difference.
You mentioned the character. Last week there was a lot of body blows, really, wasn't there? I mean, we played so well against Leverkusen and didn't get what we wanted, and then Palace. But, you know, that proved today. There's a lot of cliches get thrown around about teams this time of the season, but that wasn't a team that was doing anything other than focusing on getting a positive result today.
No, we were... You know, we've been saying to the players, you know, that we have to show some form of reaction after what we've done and how we performed. I think we did. We found it tough because it was a team who were really good in possession, made it difficult for us. But so the other part of the game then as well, you're not the better team, then you have to make sure that you're not going to concede any goals. Some of the games we've been, you know, as long as we keep it 1-0, if we're losing 1-0, then we'll always have a chance of winning because of the goal scorers we've got. But if we can't defend and keep it down, then it puts us under pressure. And look, we've been without a few centre halves for recent weeks, and you know, I have to give the two credit today because it was a difficult task against a big Liverpool team, and Ange and Kurt done a good job as well.
Just lastly, you've seen off plenty of managers in your time in the Premier League, and Jurgen Klopp's been an adversary of yours for a long time now, and he's leaving Liverpool in the summer, so. You know, you probably won't be pleased to see the back of him because you've probably really enjoyed your tussles with him on the touchline.
No, I'm glad to see the back of him. I don't know if I've had any wins. But I've got to tell you that it's been really tough. He's been unbelievable in his job. But to manage Liverpool, you know, you need to be very good, and he's shown that over the years. No, he's up there with Fergie's and Josie's and Pep's, all those ones as well, because of what he's done. So really, there's lots of good managers come to the Premier League, I've got to say, and Jurgen will go down as one of them.
Well, X, this was of course the penultimate home game of the season in what feels like the end of an era for David Moyes. Do you personally feel a difference in the atmosphere because of that?
It does seem to have shifted a little bit since the talks with various managers came out last week. It does seem like West Ham fans have almost changed their stance a little bit. Those that have been a bit more, I guess, militant towards Moyes going out seem to now be saying that they want to be able to give him a send-off, which, you know, is a shift between the kind of toxic nature that there was before to what it is now. I think there's almost like a sort of sympathy towards him as opposed to dislike, and I think that has shifted it a little bit. But at the end of the day, I still don't think a decision's completely made yet. So we're all in a bit of a limbo situation. Whilst I think it looks like he is going to go, the fact that we've been talking to other managers and it suggests that he is, you know, if we don't get the right person in, and this will come in my section, a few of the other managers have sort of distanced themselves from it. maybe by default he might stay. Who knows? As I say, I don't think 100% decision's been made. But since it looks like we're considering moving him on, then yes, I think there has been a shift, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think even if we can't get a manager in and we want to offer Moyes a new contract, personally, I don't think he'd sign it. I think he's done at West Ham. I really do. Yeah. I think that there's this undertone from Moyes, and I understand it, by the way. There is this undertone that I think he has a bit of an issue with sections of the crowd, and I think he feels a bit hard done by and possibly alludes to the fact that we should be more generous for what he's achieved at West Ham, which is an argument, by the way. And I think, I don't know, I see it in his eyes and his body language, his demeanour, some of the answers he gives to certain questions, for me, suggest that even if we offered him a five-year deal on a fat wedge, I'm not sure he'd take it, you know.
Yeah, it's going to be a tricky one. And to be fair to him, I'd actually have a lot of respect for him if he did that, to be fair. If he turned around and said, look, I've mentioned it before. I've said, I don't think West Ham fans appreciate the job I've done. Therefore, I'm going to give them the chance to get a manager in which they believe can do a better job than me. I would actually respect him for that. I think it'd be a good indication of the strength of character. I think it's a good argument. I think it's a fair argument. It's interesting to see. You know, you always see that argument, be careful what you wish for. It's such a difficult argument because be careful what you wish for doesn't take into account what could happen. It's just it's sort of you don't know what could happen, so it doesn't work either way. You know, you could wish for something and it'd be a lot worse, but you could wish for something and it'd be a lot better. You just don't know, and it's hard to really no, until we do it. You know, like, I think, as I said to you on the last week's show, I think it's got to the situation now where it's almost impossible for him to carry on, such as the strength of feeling. And I'm not entirely saying I agree with it, because I think it's wrong in some ways that the pressure from certain groups has been so intense that a man can't do his job. I'm just, as I say, I just think that's what it is now. It's factual. That is the situation. So I think it is almost impossible for him to carry on his job. Whether the right person will come in is a debate in my mind. Will we appoint the right person? I don't know. And will that right person be able to take things on to the next level? I don't know. Time will tell. But we shall see. We shall see with what happens in the near future. But yeah, it's a strange situation to be in with three games left and still no real clarity on what the future holds.
Well, we do, of course, have one more home game left, Luton Town. How do you think the club and Moyes should handle that if that is to be his last home game in charge? Do you think that should be communicated to the fans before the game so we can give him the send-off he deserves, or just keep it hush and make a decision at the end of the season and announce it?
Well, if a decision has been made, this is the key thing. If they are genuinely having an RE, then you need to leave it until the decision is made. There's no point making an announcement prematurely, but if they are convinced he is the one that's going to go, and that's only what David Sullivan and a few other people around him will know the true answer to, if they've actually come to a decision, which actually I don't think they have, my gut instinct is that they're as undecided as we feel they are. I actually don't think they have made a concrete decision, but I think they're erring towards Moyes going, because they wouldn't have spoken to these other managers. But I don't think they've made a definite decision at this point. And if they haven't, then they can't do an announcement. But if they have made that decision, then I think it's the right thing to do. I think it would show an element of class. I think it would show us the chance to say thank you to a manager that's done a lot for us. And I think it would put us in a good light with future appointments if we can have a period where we acknowledge what he's done, say thank you and move on. I just think it makes us look a bit more classy, and I think it makes us much more desirable for other managers to come into if they see that we have treated him with respect rather than bummed him out. Because as we've seen from the Martin Allen podcast we do and any other podcast we do where we speak to a person that's been involved in management, there is a management union as such where they all kind of respect and look out for each other. And I think if we handle him leaving in the correct way, I think it will only be beneficial. If we don't, then I think it could put potential managers off maybe wanting the job at West Ham. But whatever is the case, if a decision has been made for him to go already, then we need to communicate that to fans as soon as possible, I believe.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you're right. Logically, if you haven't made that decision, you can't announce it. But if you have made that decision, if I were West Ham, I would agree with David Moyes that it would be announced it's a mutual decision. It wouldn't just be announced that we're letting David Moyes go. I'd say it would be a mutual decision. And that then, I think, would, I suppose, suppress a bit of the, in inverted commas, disrespect talking to managers. You know, if David Moyes has mutually agreed to leave, then and we're speaking to other managers, then that would then make sense, because it's almost like he's given that his blessing if he's agreed to leave the club anyway, rather than this being behind his back, which I think is a bit of an issue at the moment. But, you know, I think I would announce it as a mutual decision, and then he gets the chance to thank the fans for the memories we've created together, and vice versa, and wish the club all the very best success in the future. And I think also as a mutual decision, I think he leaves with his stock high as well, given what he's achieved at West Ham and the fact that he hasn't been sacked as a manager. I think that would be key. Because look, whether you're Moyes in or Moyes out, he deserves that. He deserves a good send-off. And if you're Moyes out, well, you've got your wish. So the least we can do is give him a decent send-off. I've been Moyes out for a while now, but that's nothing personal. I don't have an issue with him personally. This is football. I just see my football club going in a different direction than I have done for a while. But that doesn't mean to say I don't want to thank him and shake his hand for what he's done for this football club. I just think moving forward, I think he's peaked, and I think we should be looking at other options. And that now brings me on, X, to say, with it now almost seeming inevitable, in my opinion, that Moyes is going to go, we're now being linked with all these different managers. Now, obviously, I don't want to step on your toes with your section, but the concept of being linked with all these different managers now, how do you feel? Do you feel excited by the names being put forward? Because I've got to be honest, for me, I'm excited about the future, but I can't get excited over managers I don't know. All the names that are being put forward, I've got absolutely no idea of who they are and what they've achieved. And maybe that's on me and I've got to do a bit more research. But, you know, the whole be careful what you wish for argument, I'm wishing for a young, innovative manager that is ticking all the boxes that David Moyes isn't ticking to take this club forward. But I don't know if that is going to come in the form of any of the managers that we're being linked with who have never managed in the Premier League. So I've got mixed emotions about it at the moment. How do you feel?
Same as you, mate. And this is why I've always found it hard to be completely Moyes out. But and that is one of the main factors. Now, of course, there'll be people screaming at me as they are on our podcast nowadays. They want this guy. Yeah, there are people, but from my own personal experience, there aren't those that I can 100% say that's the man, we've got to go and get him. And whether that shouldn't stop us, that could just be, like you said, a lack of knowledge on our part. But there isn't anyone that jumps out to me. You know, as I've mentioned, the guy from Ipswich is the one that stands out to me the most, because I can't think of a better job where, you know, Ipswich was struggling in League One. They've got promoted straight away from League One as the top scorers in all the divisions. It looks like, unless they fuck it up, they're going to get automatic promotion this season as well. That's two straight promotions for a guy that's worked at Manchester United, so has got that kind of big club experience and is meant to be a young, brilliant coach that plays youth players and plays attacking football. To me, he ticks all the boxes. But then you've got the question, well, he's not got the experience from a top club, not got the experience in the Premier League, is in the out-and-out manager, and then you start to look at the others. Fonseca at Lille, you know, he has a decent CV. You know, he's managed in Italy, he's managed in Ukraine, he's managed, he's done well in France and stuff. I think he plays attacking football. He looks like he could tick the boxes. But again, you know, there's no guarantees there. And then you look at some of the others, Lopetegui, or whatever his name is, doesn't excite me too much. You know, some of the German links, the guy at Stuttgart, yeah, maybe he's done well for them. He could be potentially someone, but there's no one there that screams to me. You know, even Vincent Kompany, we've been linked with Gary O'Neill. I can take it, and if they came, I would be quite excited to back the new manager, but I'm not sitting here thinking, that's the one. And it does worry me a little bit that I don't feel like this towards the manager. And as I say, it could just be me. There's other people that will really buy into these managers, but that's always been one of my concerns.
Well, we have to give a massive shout out to Jared Honour, who by scoring his 16th Premier League goal of the season, equaled the most amount of goals scored in this division by Paolo Di Canio. If you had to vote today, X, is he your hammer of the year? Because I think he's mine.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, I think so. In terms of consistency, you know, he's been the most consistent. He signed a new big deal with us at the start of the season, which was a massive boost. You know, he always gives effort every game. He's got into the England squad and done quite well for them this year. He's, like you say, he's broken a record which has been around since the late 90s. You know, so I think yeah, he's got to be Hammer of the Year. I mean, there's obviously a few contenders there that you could argue Areola's been consistent. You could argue Emerson. You could argue Alvarez. You could argue Kudos. But I think in terms of from the start of the season to the end of the season, in terms of his ability and the impact he has on games, then I think you've got to say that he's got to be Hammer of the Year, yeah.
Well, one name that you didn't mention there was Paqueta. How do you rate his season so far?
I think it's fizzled out a little bit.
I agree.
I think he's had a solid season. He's a great player. When West Ham are playing well, I think he plays well. I think we missed him at the start of the year when he was out for that period of time. And of course, he's a world-class player. You don't get Brazil caps and link with Manchester City if you're not. I just think he hasn't contributed as much as an £85 million player should do in recent weeks. I think he's a luxury player. I think when we're playing well, and he's playing well, he's brilliant. But there's certain times when I think he gives the ball away too frequently. And if I was to be offered £85 million for him, I think I would take it. And I'd be sad to see him go because I like him. He's a good player. You always want to see Brazilian internationals playing for your side, particularly creative ones. But I just don't think he is as on form as I would want for someone valued at that highly.
Yeah. Well, given the fact of what you just said and the fact that he is obviously linked with Man City and the fact that he is going to want to go to Man City, let's be honest about it. The release clause, I believe, is £85 million. So would you say to Man City, if you want him, it's an absolute non-negotiable £85 million. You've got to hit that release clause. Or would you entertain negotiations for less, knowing that the player would want to leave?
I think you've got to sort of go for £85 million. But you know what I would be saying is I would always try and get a couple of players from these clubs. Like if the clause is £85 million, I mean, there's been talk they might let Jack Grealish go. I mean, if that's the case, I can't. Whether he'd come to West Ham, I don't know. But I can't think of a more perfect replacement than Jack Grealish. All right, they're not like for like entirely, but if you're looking at West Ham to improve the squad, you know, you could do a lot worse than getting him in. They've also got a couple of youngsters that you could look at that I think would make good additions to the squad. You know, I would always, when you're negotiating with a club like Manchester City, I would always try and see if you could get a player out of them before you go purely for the money, because at the end of the day, it's good having £85 million, but you can only get as good a replacement as you can actually attempt to the club. And the best players are going to be playing for the likes of Manchester City and so on. And so if you can persuade one of their better players, you know, there was talk when Paquetá was originally linked with Manchester City that we would get Cole Palmer. Now, I would love us to have got him. I think he's been one of the best players this season in all of the clubs. And so if we could have got him, he would have been ideal. Obviously, that's not going to happen now. But any sort of player in exchange that's reasonably, you know, good at Manchester City is going to be good enough for us. So that's what I would do first.
Yeah, it does make sense. I would be very interested, if Jack was interested in coming to West Ham, I'd be interested to see what that deal would be financially. Because obviously, if you're just talking straightforward transaction for Lucas, it's £85 million. And given the fact they signed Jack for, what, £100 million, and he's still an England international, and he's just won a treble with Man City, what value is against him?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Is it a straight swap? Or would we get any money for him?
I think you'd look to get a little bit of money for him, probably, but it probably wouldn't be that far off the 85, I would guess. But I would take it, because again, like, well, who could West Ham get realistically? I mean, again, like, there's a foreign player out there that I don't know of that would be as good. I think he'd be a brilliant signing for us. Perfectly, exactly what we need. English, homegrown. Imagine having him and Bowen get him attacking. I think he's a good lad. He comes across really well as a person, I think. So I think he'd be a great addition to our squad. He's the sort of player that West Ham fans would really get into and really buy into. That's what I would do personally, and I think that would be work best for all parties, really. Then, but again, whether he'd come to West Ham, I don't know. Because I'd imagine the likes of maybe Liverpool and Manchester United and stuff would be tempted by Grealish. I think he's better than what they've got. So whether we could get him to West Ham, I don't know.
It's an interesting one, though. Well, it was Jared's 200th appearance for West Ham, and it was also Kurt Zouma's 100th. Appearance for the club. How do you feel about Kurt X? Do you think he has a future at West Ham?
I like Kurt. I think he's solid. I think he's a good lad. I think he's done well since we signed him. You know, you have to put into relation the fact that West Ham did really well in Europe when we signed Kurt Zouma. I think that's underestimated a little bit, his influence on our recent success, because, you know, obviously he's been captain this year, but I think when he came in, he did provide a lot more experience and solidness to the defence. That said, our defence has obviously been terrible this year, but individually, I think he's been a good signing. I worry that he's gradually coming towards the time at the end of his career. Now, I know age-wise, probably not, but knee-wise, I think he is. I would have him still at the squad next year. I do think we need to sign two centre-backs, and I would make them ahead of him. I'd have two centre-backs ahead of him, and then I would have Zouma and Mavropanos in that squad as well. So you've got a centre-backs of four. I would let Agüero go. I would let Ogbonna go, and I'd have Casey there as well. So that would be my five centre-backs, with Casey included. And I think he's still got a future to play around the place. But I do worry, as the years go by, as with any player, but particularly someone with his knee history, his availability and his effectiveness is going to be reduced quite rapidly over a short period of time.
Yeah, and I think that's the issue, isn't it? I mean, his age, what is he, 28?
I think so, 28.
Yeah, 28. Not the end of the world for a centre-half in the Premier League. Quite a decent age, actually. But when you look at his knees, I don't think they're going to get any better. At times I've watched him this season, it does look like he's caught in treacle, which is a concern. When you look at the pace of the Premier League, how many more seasons is he going to get away with that? I do agree. I think we should be prioritising the defence now. I absolutely adore Emerson. And I think, you know, when it comes to selecting your defence, he's the first name on the team sheet. But I'd definitely look at two centre-halves and a right-back. And in my centre-half pairing, I would want a leader as well, because I think that's key. I think Kurt's a very likeable fella, and he's a very happy-go-lucky man. But how much respect does he command? I don't know. And his availability is a problem. I believe your captain should be someone that plays week in, week out. I think that's a factor as well. So I think whoever that centre-half pairing should be, at least one of them has to be a big character and a leader that can command from the back, because I think we've lacked that really since we've lost Declan and Mark, who were two good captains for West Ham. And is Kurt a good captain? You'd have to ask the players, but I think in terms of who wears the armband, we can probably do better. And that has to be taken into consideration, I think, when we're looking at replacing those centre-halves. A bit of a funny one, this, X, but when you look at the league table, right, we're currently eighth. Considering we've conceded the fourth highest amount of goals in the division, and only Man United and Bournemouth have scored less than West Ham in the top 10, do you think eighth is quite flattering for us?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, our current form in 2024 has been pretty poor, hasn't it, really? I think we're lucky that all the teams around us haven't been able to be consistent. Manchester United, Newcastle, Chelsea, and then the likes of Brighton and those teams that are kind of on the cusp. I think the league table is actually quite flattering, and, you know, it's a difficult argument because the boys out, as we'll say, yeah, that league table just doesn't reflect the 2024, since this year. But then the league table doesn't lie, does it? And we are there. That's fact. So it's a real tricky dilemma. But yeah, I don't think we've performed as well in 2024. Now, I think, again, it's a classic West Ham where we're in a good position going into January. You know, we just beaten Arsenal at the Emirates. Things were looking quite strong. We could have kicked on. We could have brought in maybe two or three players just to give us that drive home. We brought in Phillips. That didn't work. We didn't bring in anyone else. We let a couple of other players go. And I think that stagnated our season again. And I don't know why. And I know all clubs say it, and West Ham particularly say it, that January is always hard. But there has to be someone out there in the whole of the football world that you can take a gamble on, that could add a bit of spark. You know, that how many times in West Ham's years gone by has a certain signing triggered something. You know how you look at Hartson and Kitson when they were signed in sort of March time or whenever it was, Decanio and Foe, they were signed in January time. You know, there's always those players that you bring in that do kickstart season, yet in recent years, we just almost seem to accept that that doesn't happen anymore. And I think where we like to have a smaller squad, we don't like to use youngsters and stuff, bringing in one or two players in January would have been key. And I think, yeah, the league table is a bit flattering to the situation, but at the end of the day, the league table is the facts, and wherever we end up at the end of the season, that is where we deserve to end up. But obviously, we've got three games left. Chelsea away, very hard to predict that game. Luton at home, you'd like to think you'd get 3 points, but they are fighting for their lives. And then Man City, you know, if they've won the league by then, maybe we might have a chance. But I think if it's everything to play for, we won't. So realistically, what are we going to pick up? 4 points, maybe a maximum. 4 points isn't going to be enough to get us into Europe, I don't think. And it's a bit of a flat end to the season, unfortunately. And if that is the case, that does make me feel that it is the time. It's not the end of the world for season. It's not a bad season, but it does make me feel like we need an injection of newness now. And I think that's why it would be time to move Moyes on now.
Yeah, some good points made, mate. I mean, when you're talking about January transfer window, it's always a stressful, toxic time for West Ham, isn't it? Because we always seem to need players in January and everyone gets pissed off when they don't arrive. You know, my philosophy on it is do a better fucking job in the summer so you don't need to rely on January to bring players in. You know, I just don't understand from a recruitment perspective why we at times have to rely so much on January and we find ourselves light. It's just like we don't prepare well enough, in my opinion, and we put ourselves under pressure in January and we do potentially overpay for players because we need them. You know, so I don't know. I think that needs to be looked at as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the classic West Ham. I genuinely, like, people sort of, you know, even with the manager situation, I genuinely don't think they've made a decision on it. Like, I think, you know, they've considered Moyes going, and obviously on the back of the Palace game particularly, where we were terrible, they would have been like, yeah, we think it's time to go. But then knowing how they work, I think the result against Liverpool, about 4, actually, that's not a bad result. And I think the way their minds are is that it's always the case, is that we never seem to do anything with real conviction. Everything we do seems to be almost half-hearted. You look, even if you go back to when they first took over, yeah, they had Zola as manager, right? Zola was already the manager when they took over, and they kind of loosely backed him to the end of the season, didn't they? I sort of said, yeah, we'll sort of back him, but not really, but we kind of will, but we won't. And then immediately at the end of the season, they appointed Avram Grant, right? And Avram Grant came in, and he wasn't meant to be the number one choice, but he got the job. And then within about January time, they were openly talking to Martin O'Neill and talking to other managers about taking over, which, you know, I think we would have gone down anyway under Grant, but it massively undermined Avram Grant massively. And then there was the whole right where we sacked him before the end of the season. And then we get in Sam Allardyce when they admit that necessarily he wasn't necessarily the best choice for football, got him promoted, got us promoted, and then sort of undermined him. You know, within about when we were looking at the Champions League spot, we were talking about him not being the manager anymore. Then we get Bilic in, and then Bilic was openly not the first choice, third or fourth choice, very publicly admitted that, got him in. Then, you know, had a great season. Then when the cracks started to appear, they started to question whether he was the right manager. Same with Pellegrini and same with Moyes, got rid of him once, brought him back. There's never any, like, kind of real conviction with what we do. There's never like, this is the right decision. We know we've made the right decision. This is it. There's always polls put out by various affiliates to the board to gauge fans' feelings. There just always seems to be this, like,
amateur, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Amateur indecisiveness to things. And I genuinely believe, I don't think they've made a 100% decision on the manager yet. And whatever the case is, it just delays everything. You know, recruitment team, they can't sign players without knowing who the manager is. The backroom staff, they don't know exactly what their future's going to be. At the moment, it looks like we might be getting a new manager, but as I say, I don't think it is 100% black and white at this point. And it's just, you know, that's what the club insists. I'll say more in my section, but the club insists that a decision hasn't been made. And, you know, whether you believe them or not, it's up to you. But I just think we've always had this indecisiveness, and that ultimately holds us back from being that top club that you and many others think that we should be, because we just don't have that conviction on what is the right path to take in everything. Look at our ground. Still not got naming rights to it. Our training ground, you know, we're constantly developing that, but never really investing entirely into a new training ground. Recruitment, you know, we look at players, kind of think we're going to sign them, don't get a good academy. Finally got an academy that's producing the goods. Yet don't play the academy players. It's always like, so that not quite convincing enough to be a top club. When Manchester City or Liverpool make a decision like they've done, whether it's the right decision or the wrong decision, we know that Klopp's going at the end of the season, and we've known about that for months. West Ham.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
It's so true, mate. We are so amateur on so many different levels. You know, I think when you look at the owners, they've done some good things for West Ham, which gets overlooked and not necessarily spoken about. But I do believe, and I've said this so many times, that we'll never really and truly kick on and unlock our full potential with them owning the football club. We won't. I think we can do good things with a good manager, but then again, you're putting a lot of trust in them to make the right decision. I mean, you know, this is what worries me a little bit as well, because when you talk about, you know, forget Moyes in, Moyes out. If you're talking about whether it's the right decision to part ways with David Moyes now, which I believe it is, even if we part ways with him and bring a manager in and it dies on its ass and we're in a relegation battle, it doesn't necessarily mean that we were wrong to let David Moyes go. It just means that we've got the replacement wrong. And that's what worries me, because now we're in the owner's hands now to make the right decision. And can they make the right decision? Not a sidestep and not a backward step, a forward step. Are they shrewd enough to ask the right questions, to know what really matters to this football club? You know, to tick those boxes that can take us to the next level. I don't know. Time will tell.
No, exactly, mate. And I totally agree with what you've just said there. This has always been my concern. And it's always, well, the sort of the point I was trying to allude to last week on last week's show is, what is our expectations? Because our expectations, like you say, you know, club in London, big ground, big club, et cetera, et cetera. Yes, that is true. But we've always got the same chairman that we've had for the last 10, 15 years. And as you say, I think they've done a good job in some ways. When you look at West Ham and where we are now, you know, where from the position we're in now, as in a European last 3 years, top half of the table, big ground. You know, when you look at it, the facts like that, we have improved. Our actual worth as a football club is a lot more now. So we have improved significantly under their ownership. But do they have it within their capabilities to appoint a manager that is going to be a forward step on Moyes? Many people will say, well, anyone's a forward step on Moyes, you know, but do you have to look at the facts. Will this next manager take West Ham into the top eight of the table regularly, into Europe every year, playing good football, using the youth, developing future players? You know, they're going to have long-term value to the club. That's the key. Will they get that appointment right? And that's what we will have to find out. And we can't do anything about it. We just have to trust that they will. And I think it is the right time to take that gamble. But whether I'm going to sit here and say whoever the next appointment is going to be a significant improvement on David Moyes, I can't bring myself to say that because at this point, I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I wish I had more personal knowledge about the names that we've been linked with. There are people out there that know a hell of a lot more than I do that are very passionate about some of the managers we're linked with, and I think they're doing an incredible job. So
yeah,
lack of knowledge on our part, maybe. But again, time will tell, won't it? It's, I suppose, to a degree, it's always a gamble for a manager, though, isn't it? Always a gamble. It was a gamble for Graham Potter going to Chelsea. You know, do you know what I mean? It was a gamble for Jurgen Klopp to go to Liverpool. It's always a gamble because there's no guarantees, is there?
No, exactly. As you say, it's always a gamble. There's no guarantees. And even these experts that can turn around and list off why this manager is the best appointment for West Ham, that's only based on what they've done in another club. You know?
And like, in another country.
In another country, yeah. Circumstances are different. You know, like, it's been proven other managers can come to England and fail. Not always, as Klopp and Guardiola and various other managers have proven, but it's not always a guaranteed formula that if a manager does well at, you know, whoever, that they're going to go and do well in England. It's not. And then how much do you hide behind the grass isn't always greener phrasing? You know, it's a real tough decision. This decision to get right, and I think it is time for Moyes to go. I really do now, because I think it's too toxic, and I think if he was to turn around and say to the fan base, we've come to the decision that we think David Moyes is the next manager, is the right manager for us for the next 2 or 3 years, I think there'll be a real negative feeling amongst the fan base. But that's why I think it's time for him to go. But they, you know, it's a real interesting situation we find ourselves right now, and I think it's why there's going to be a lot to talk about in this coming summer, because there's so much to get done. And I still believe, and it's what I'm being told by the board. I can't tell you anything that I'm not being told by them. I can only go on what they're saying, and what they're saying is the decision isn't made yet. You know, they might know what the decision is, but public front they're putting on is that a decision hasn't been made. Moyes' staff, one of them, a couple of them that I've managed to speak to, seems to think that they're going. But if you speak to David Moyes, and you speak to anyone connected to him, like his brother, for example, his brother is telling people that a decision hasn't been made. So maybe that is the case. And to be honest with you, it makes sense to make that decision in the summer. All right, it makes that you want to do it earlier because you want to get it sorted, and so you can start. Recruiting, but in the summer, you'll know what the facts are. You'll know where West Ham are in the league, and you'll know what the situation is with all the other managers out there as well, and then you can make your decision. At this point, you don't know what managers are going to take what jobs, what managers will come to West Ham. So maybe that is the truth. They have to wait until they know, have all the facts.
Yeah. I mean, Moyes always seems to speak highly of David Sullivan, but I've got to be honest, I think it's been piss poor from David Sullivan, the way he's handled it. Since we won that trophy, we've said on this show, he either should have been backed or sacked. Instead, he's been left in limbo, and that comes with its complications. And now we've got to a point where, if we take the scenario where they still haven't made a decision, well, if you haven't made a decision, then just carry on as things are, and don't speak to other managers behind Moyes' back. It's just this constant leaving people hanging in the air all the time. It's like you said, where's the conviction? Where's the clear strategy? Where is the black and whites? Right, you know, if this isn't achieved, then this is going to happen. And right, okay, David, we're going to sit you down. Let's have a chat. You don't want to be here? Okay, then we'll start speaking to other managers. David, we don't want you to be here. Okay, we'll start speaking to other managers. You know, or let's just see how we go to the end of the season. We'll make a call then. So we won't speak to those managers. It just seems... It's amateur. Like I said before, it's an amateur way to treat a human being and to run a football club, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Very disappointing.
I think you'd have, if you were thinking about talking, getting rid of the manager, I think in some ways you have to have been drawing up a list and maybe talk to people behind the manager's back, because there's no other way you could do it without being completely transparent.
No, and true.
So I think you kind of have to, but on the same time, I think they almost need to, and maybe they have, we don't know this, but they almost need to say to David Moyes, look, we are considering the options.
Yes.
These are the options out there, but that doesn't mean for 1 minute you've got the job or not. Because, for example, when you go for a promotion within your own job, let's just say, obviously, you know, my job prior to doing this or your job prior to doing this, you know that you might be doing a great job in your role, and you might be you might think you've done as best as you can. But if a new promotion comes up or a job comes up again, you know that your employers are going to consider what the other options are, unless you've done like the most outstanding job in the world and there's nothing that's even going to be comparable. So it's almost natural that people would do that. But I think you've got to handle it the right way and say to David Moyes, isn't it? And I would say to David Moyes, say that in your press conferences, say they are looking at other alternatives, but you know, they're still considering me as one of them. I'd be happy for him to say that. But you know, maybe that's what they need to do. I don't know. But as I always say, we've been in this situation before and we've not learned from it. We've done this in Allardyce. We've done this in Pellegrini. How many times was Pellegrini told he's going to have one more game, two more games, three more games? Same with David Moyes the first time. Then we get rid of him. Then we bring him back. We just don't ever seem to be completely convinced on what the right decision is. And that uncertainty, for me, always means that West Ham will struggle to be a consistent top six side until we can have more conviction in that we know what we're doing is the right decision, and we can project that decision to all stakeholders. Because whilst there's uncertainty, the fans, the players, potential signings, potential managers will also look at West Ham and think, well, what is the situation with them? And they'll have uncertainty over it. Whereas if you've got a director or a chairman or whatever that say, right, I think this is what we need to do, this is where we're going to be in a couple of years' time, and this is how we're going to get there, it just gives you much more confidence in the project. And at the moment, the uncertainty to me causes us to give me doubts as to whether we'll ever kick on to the next level or not.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, just to clarify, you know, when you're talking about a contingency plan, then of course, yeah, you have to be in communication with other managers. But it just seems to me like it's just no clear thought process ever. And I go back to leaving him in limbo with on the back of the trophy win. Either should have sacked him or backed him. And I just go back to the fact that, you know, why not give Moyes, if you wanted to keep him, you didn't want to lose him, give him a 3-year deal. And I think the reason he didn't want to do that is because he's petrified of parting with compensation if it doesn't work out at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And that's just not how football works. You're a top level football club. We're a financially secure football club. To make big decisions, sometimes it is going to cost a few quid. You know, that's compensation. That's part and parcel of appointing managers.
I agree totally. And when you look at it like this, yeah, I don't know the exact figures, but I think Almiron's been quoted something like 17 million, which is obviously a lot. But usually these figures for compensation on managers, to sack a manager and then to appoint a manager, so both deals combined don't usually come to more than 10 million. Don't usually. I mean, let's just say for argument's sake, it comes to 20 million. Just for argument's sake, to sack your manager and then appoint the right manager. 20 million in today's market when it comes to signing players is absolutely nothing. When players are going for 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 million, the manager appointment is the most important thing you can do.
Exactly.
And so I don't understand why we have this archaic like sort of attitude towards paying compensation towards a manager. If you know your decision is right to sack the manager and get the right manager in, then paying around 20 million is the right thing to do. And it frustrates me that we look at managers as being available as to whether they've got a contract or not. The best managers surely are going to have a contract, because those that don't have contracts have either been sacked by their previous management club, or they're in a bit of a limbo at their career where they've taken a bit of time out. They're not at the peak of having had success. The best managers will be in employment, and therefore you're going to have to pay compensation.
Yeah. Exactly. I just think that we just do things backwards sometimes. That's my frustration. It's just, I don't know. I just always feel like we could be on the cusp of doing something fantastic, and then we just do sometimes the simple things so wrong, and you just end up tearing your hair out with it. But time will tell. Maybe they'll make the right appointment and surprise everyone, and then we'll really kick on. But you know, I've got my doubts over the ownership, I think, as most fans have. Well, talking of the league table, X, Sheffield United were relegated at the weekend. How poor have they been this season? I mean, 35 games gone, three wins, seven draws, 25 defeats and 97 goals conceded, X. 97, a fucking hell. We thought our defence was shit. I mean, they have to be up there with Swindon for the worst ever Premier League team, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, they're just poor. I mean, you look through their squad and look, I always find it, and again, it's probably an indication of my football knowledge dwindling, but I look at their team and I find it hard. I wouldn't be able to name them. 1 to 11, I don't think.
No.
And when I look at their squad, and that wouldn't have happened with good teams gone by, and when I look at their squad, there's just no players in that team that you can even imagine playing for a decent team, really. I mean, when people say to you, when the Cubs get relegated, what players would you take from them? Well, I actually don't think I'd take anyone from Sheffield United. Like, there's no one that stands out to me from their squad. And that's why I think, you know, one of the turning points for West Ham this season, which stopped us kicking on to doing well in the league, was Sheffield United away. You know, when they had all those decision goes against us up there and we somehow came away with only a point. We should have got 3 points in that game up there. I would have been in a lot better position than we are now. With those extra 2 points and the momentum it would have caused at the time, yeah, they're a poor team. But I think the gulf between the Championship and the Premier League is just getting bigger and bigger, because you just look at the three teams that are down there, and they're all the teams that got promoted. And then the team that's sitting just above them have had a points deduction and were the team that were promoted, recently as well. And then you look at the teams at the top of the Championship, Ipswich aside, those teams up there are all teams that have been in the Premier League recently. And it just seems that there's almost like the tier of like the top 6 to 8 teams maybe in the Premier League, and then every other team kind of falls between all right, good enough for the Premier League at the current time, but could go into the Championship, but then might be able to get back out of the Championship. And those three teams are like that. And it's surprising that actually out of the three of them, the one that's probably given it the best fight, Luton, are probably the team that you would have thought would have struggled the most. But actually, when you look at their squad, they're probably the team that I would take the most players from. Got a couple of forwards that I'd consider. They've got a full-back, Doherty, I think his name is, that I would consider. They're probably the one that I would consider the most players from. But they've got the most fight. But yeah, Sheffield United's a poor team. I'm glad to see the back of them with the history that we've had with them. And not a bad little away day. We had a good time up there, up in Sheffield this year. But time for them to go, I think.
Yeah, and hopefully they won't come back either. I'm not a fan of Sheffield United, I'll be honest. But
I prefer Wednesday out of the team, Sheffield United.
Yeah.
Much more of a history, being a ground. You know, in the 90s, they were a good team, playing good football.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, we often talk about how exciting our academy is these days. What do you think the future holds for Freddie Potts? Because for those who don't know, he's just won Players' Player and Supporters Player of the Year on loan at Wickham, because he's 20 now. So does he fall into that category of he's either going to make it at West Ham now or he isn't? Is he going to be another Connor Coventry, or do you think he's done enough to be part of that squad?
It's a tricky one, because he's done really well at Wickham. So he's done all that can be asked of him. He couldn't have done better. Wickham fans love him. You know, he's won all those awards, but he's playing in League One. And, you know, a team that's... done okay in League One, but it's not Premier League standard. Connor Coventry did well at Rotherham in Championship. Connor Coventry did well at Lincoln in League One and MK Dons and stuff. At what point do these loans become worthwhile evidence that they can make it? In my opinion, Freddie Potts is a good player. He's got the history of Rotherham, his dad. I would keep him in the squad next year. He's homegrown. I would have him in that team. He's creative. He can do a job. I would keep him there. Whether he's good enough to be a Premier League player, I'm not sure. I think he probably needs a loan, I would say, at a Championship level, like Flynn Downs has done, to go and prove himself and show that he can definitely do it. But it's just a real, again, tough thing in football. What is the parameters that mean you're good enough when you go on loan? He couldn't really have done much more for Wickham. But then, is it good enough? Is it good enough to play that well for Wickham and then be considered a Premier League player? I think having been the son of a West Ham legend, I think that will help him. I think the fact that Steve Potts is the under-21s manager, he'll be pushing him to be in that first 11. I think that will help. And I guess what they need to do is give him pre-season, give him some time with the first team, see what he can do. And then, like a bit like with Connor Coventry, make a decision in January whether he's going to play a part for us or not, and then act accordingly.
Yeah. I think if you look at the question that you've just asked there, with Freddie going there, smashing it, winning two separate awards, doing that well, whether that's good enough to get a crack at West Ham in the Premier League. If the answer's no, then the next question has to be, well, what was the fucking point of him going there then?
Yeah, true. It is that question. But then maybe it's he goes there for a season, then he goes to a Championship side for a season, and then we see where he goes. I mean, ideally, what you'd want to happen is for him to go to a team in the Premier League, maybe that's got promoted and that does play and he does well, then you take him, because that's what the big clubs do. You know, look at those clubs, they loan their players to other Premier League teams and then see whether they're good enough for us, for them, whereas we do it like Championship and League One. And you're right, what's the point of loaning him if it's not going to be good enough? But I personally think you need to give him a try. Is he any better than George Earthy or Lewis Orford and other midfielders in the squad? I don't know enough about Freddie Potts. I think he'd have to be hard pushed to be, because I think those two are very, very good players. So do you make the decision that the path is even more promising beneath Freddie Potts, and you cash in on Freddie Potts? I don't know. Freddie Potts didn't have the hype that Lewis Orford and George Earthy have had at that stage of his career, so I don't know. But personally, I'm always one for giving academy lads a chance. I would have him in the first squad. I would have him, Flynn Downs, Lewis Orford, George Earthy. I would have those four competing to be maybe two of four players that you'd have in that squad. The other two, you then either sell or loan out. But I think I would make that decision based on their impact in
training. Casey as well.
He's a centre back though. But yeah, for those midfielders, I would. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, time will tell. Be interested to see how many academy players do get in that squad next season, because I think from their perspective and their family's perspective and the agent's perspective, you know, if they don't get a sniff again next season, regardless of who's in charge, then questions have to be asked, don't they, in terms of their future? Because, you know, another year being older, you know, I know some of them are still quite young, but they're obviously doing really well. They feel ready. They're hungry. They want to kick on. They want to start earning decent money because they feel like they've earned it now. And I think it could be quite damaging if they don't get the opportunity. But yeah, certainly the five players we've mentioned there, I'd totally agree with you on that. Totally. Well, if you are a patron of the West Ham Way, you will know that we published an interview with Savio Ensereco last Friday. Now, X handled the conversation with Savio in a run-up to the interview. And when we did actually chat with him, I, for one, found him to be quite likeable. He's quite shy and unassuming. I think, you know, quite a sweet fella. But before I pass you over to X to share the communication he had with him before the interview happened, keep in mind that whether he did or not, Savio was accused of faking his own kidnapping and extorting his own family for €25,000 to get him released, right? An accusation that he does deny, by the way. But because of the severity of the accusation, some would be forgiven for assuming that he could be a little bit shifty, especially when money's involved. So, X, over to you, mate.
So, yeah, I want to reiterate that in all my dealings with him, he's been very polite, very enthusiastic about the interview. He has been very... he was keen to listen to the interview afterwards, very grateful for the opportunity. And actually, I thought, as you said, he came across really well on the podcast. And actually, you know, came across as a nice guy, was quite humble, quite accepting that he perhaps didn't apply himself as well as he maybe should have at times. And so I do want to say that in his defence. However...
Now to the prosecution.
Yeah. However... the whole lead up to getting Savio on the show kind of fitted in a little bit with the stories that I'd been hearing prior about him. So I spoke to him about coming on the show. He followed me, actually was a link up by a patron who initially, I think his name might be Matt Powell, originally got a link. So thank you to him. And then I made contact with him on Instagram. It's definitely him. You know, he's got 100,000 followers, all his pictures. It's definitely him. So he didn't get conned as such. And it's all him doing gym work. So he followed me back on Instagram. I thought, that's a good sign. Messaged him about doing the podcast. He didn't get an answer. And then I threw in the fact that we would pay him to do the podcast. and we don't pay a huge amount to our guests because obviously it's, we don't earn a huge amount either. So it's all proportionate. But occasionally we can offer the odd incentive as part of the Patreon subscription and as part of our drive to have good quality on Patreon. So we offered him some money and he replied instantly, which was a change from when I hadn't mentioned it. And so he talks about the money. Da, 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 da. He was very insistent that the money get paid in advance of the podcast.
Which is strange in itself. We've never had that.
We've never done that before, but you know what? I thought, okay, it's quite a big name, let's do it. So I got his PayPal account for him. Right, first we gave me his bank details, and every time I tried to pay it, because it was a foreign bank, a German bank, every time I tried to pay it, it kept saying it didn't recognise the sort code in the country he was saying the bank account was from. So I messaged back and said, mate, this is not working. So anyway, so after a few backs and forths, we'll do it on PayPal. So I'm like, okay, you sure you want to do it on PayPal? Yeah, do it on PayPal. And because it's, I don't know, those of you that know how PayPal works, basically you can do a friends and family thing, which means you don't pay a fee if you trust the person you're paying, which admittedly I probably should have just gone with what I had my gut instinct and not trusted. I thought, right, he's given me the PayPal account. So anyway, I went with friends and family. Having just paid the friends and family amount of money, he literally came back to me about 2 hours later and said, you haven't done it as friends and family, have you? And I said, yes, mate, why? It's your account, isn't it? He went, no, it's my friend's account. And now he's refusing to pay me. And I was like, but I've just paid the 200 quid, mate. And he was like, okay, well, I'll see if I can get it back. And I was like, right, okay, this is very odd. And then he said, you can't pay me another £200, can you? And I was like, mate, I've already paid you the £200. And he was like, yeah, but I'm not going to get it. And I was like, but you gave me that address. We're going back and forth. It got to the point where he was saying he couldn't turn up unless we paid him in advance again. And I said, but I've already paid you. And he said, don't worry, I'll honour it, but you still need to pay me again. But I said, well, you're not going to honour it if I'm going to pay you again, are you? He said, no, what you do is you pay me it again and then I'll pay you back. So I was like, so what, you're going to pay me back the £200 I've already paid you? He was like, yes, it'll only cost you £200. So I was like, right, I don't get what you're talking about, mate. And it was just going back and forth to the point where I didn't think we were going to have an interview. And then I messaged you, and I was like, you know what? Shall we just do it? Just for the sake that we got conned by Savio, is almost worth being conned by Savio for.
Actually, it's money well spent, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. Just to be able to say that we were conned by him, and it fits in the story. So I then paid him another £300, so we paid £400 for the interview. And he turned up, and he did the interview, and we've all heard the interview, and he promises me he's going to pay me back the other £200 when he gets it from whoever this random person was to start with, because the second account was his sister, so he paid his sister. God knows why we couldn't just pay him on his own PayPal, I don't know.
No.
But we've paid his sister now, so we have paid a record fee, like West Ham, for the signing. We have paid a record fee for this interview. Whether we'll ever get any value for money back from it, I don't know. But the story is, he's going to pay us back half of that. But I just thought it was funny, and you agreed with me that we've actually, I think, potentially been conned by Savio ourselves. And it's just a story that is actually quite interesting in the grand scheme of things. And whilst ideally it wouldn't have cost us as much money, and we can't usually throw away that amount of money on an interview, the fact that we've been conned by Savio and I've been conned by the Wilson Raider this year, I think it's quite a funny little story. We've been conned by those two. So yeah, as it stands, we are currently in financial disputes with Savio as to getting back the £200 he's promised that we will get back. So watch this space, and we'll keep you updated with the current situation. But yeah, all is not as well as it seems with Savio. And a lot of people did comment and say that it was clear that me and you didn't buy the story about Thailand at all. And I don't think we did, to be fair, and we can only go on what he said, but what we later discovered after we'd concluded the podcast was that he blew £1 million whilst out in Thailand. So
yeah, how the fuck did you do that, by the way? It costs about £5 a day to live there.
Yeah, exactly. So I think there's more than meets the eyes to our Savio, shall we say.
It's just incredible, isn't it? I mean, it's so funny, but there's so many questions. I mean, why did he need it up front? Did he not trust us? You know, why is he giving us a PayPal account for someone that he clearly doesn't have a good relationship with, because instantly his friend, in inverted commas, has refused to pay him the money? Why would your mate do that? And if you had a mate like that, why would you give his PayPal details to us? Like, that doesn't make sense either. And why he says he's going to get the money back. How does he intend on getting the money back? Because the geezer's obviously just fucking grifted him, isn't he? So ridiculous.
He wouldn't do his own PayPal account. He doesn't use PayPal anymore. Then he tried to give me this website. I can't even remember the name of it now, but it was a website. It was like, it literally couldn't have been more to the point. It was something like, sendusyourdough.com or something like that. It wasn't quite.
Sounds legit.
Yeah, exactly. And when I tried to do it from our business account, it told me that I needed to have more funds in the business account to be able to do it. And I was like, wait a minute, why would they need more funds? If I've got the money that he needs, which we did, then why would I need more funds? I was like, I'm not doing this. This sounds bloody dodgy. So yeah, he just couldn't give me any legit form of payment to get the money too. So yeah, fuck knows what's going on there with him, to be fair.
That's so funny. And then when you said Savio's requested a copy of it to listen to, I said to you, didn't I? I said, fuck me, he don't want 200 quid to listen to it, does he? So yeah, I think we can pretty much give up on the 200 quid that he owes us now. I mean, whoever would have thought Savio would end up owing us 200 quid?
Exactly.
Fucking mad world we live in.
In some ways, it's almost worth him owing us £200 just so that we can, for the rest of our lives, say that this record, what his name is, owes us £200. It's not many. I don't know, there might be a lot of people that can say that, but certainly there's not many in the West Ham world that can say that he's conned us out of £200. So watch this space. I will be messaging him in a couple of weeks to see what the latest is with our £200 and... yeah, maybe he will pay us back. Maybe he's legit. To be fair to him, he did say he loved the podcast. He liked to talk to us, and he'd like to do some more things with us. Whether it will cost us 200 quid every fucking time, I don't know. But you know,
to 10 different accounts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you never know. The saga might not be over yet. And then also, we've got to do the sequel to our book. Our last book was Highs, Lows and the Canios. That covered the 90s. I think we need to do Highs, Lows and Savios and cover the 2000s.
Yeah, but it wasn't another 200 quid for the fucking mention.
Yeah, probably. But what a strange and interesting character. Yet another part of the Can Only Happen to West Ham installments have been throughout our history.
It's just brilliant, mate. Comedy gold. Well, before we go to X's section, I want to send a big shout to Peter Singh, who is a massive West Ham fan. He is doing a beautiful thing, in my opinion, but needs help from the West Ham family. He runs a registered animal rescue charity for abused dogs and cats and is in desperate need of funds to help feed the 47 dogs and 25 cats that he has in his care. He's recently had to sell off all his West Ham memorabilia that he's been collecting over the last 50 years. That's how dedicated he is to giving these animals a second chance in life. If anyone could be kind enough to make any donations, no matter how big or small, it would be greatly appreciated. Check him out on Facebook. He's easy to find. His name is Peter Singh. You can see pictures and videos on his page of all the animals he has in his care and all the great work he's been doing. There's also a link on his page for any donations that people want to make. Good on you, Pete, and I hope you raise a few quid for what is a really important cause. Okay, let's do it.
Calling all West Ham fans. Are you a patron of the West Ham Way? If not, why not? For the price of a pint, you get top quality content on a daily basis, to include the famous West Ham Way podcast with Dave and X, over 100 interviews with ex-players and celebrity fans, Mad Dog Bites with Martin Allen, a show with Tony Cotty, the U Irons podcast, the West Ham Way USA, a transfer window show with Demis Sheff, an expert pre-match analysis. There are virtual events with ex-players, written articles, match day discussion, away day burger reviews, in-depth match reports, and if you want to be the first to get reliable, accurate, exclusive news on all club affairs, you'll get exactly that from the best ITK in the business, ex-West Ham United employee. All that and more delivered to your phone for a fiver a month. It's the daddy.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.